Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, underwritten in part by Green Mountain Power, CW Print and Design, formerly Coffee World, Let's Grow Kids by Concept 2, The Alchemist, UVM Medical Center, as well as over 750 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. This weekend was a remarkable one in the world of civil liberties. Last week, President Donald Trump signed an executive order suspending resettlement of Syrian refugees indefinitely, suspending all other refugee resettlement for 120 days, and banning the entry of nationals from seven different countries for 90 days. Within 24 hours, a lawsuit was filed by the American Civil Liberties Union nationally, and President Trump's executive orders were stayed, put on hold. To get some insight into these issues nationally and locally, we have as our guest this half hour James Lyle. He is the executive director of the Vermont chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. James, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
So you are relatively new to this area. Many people know of your predecessor, Alan Gilbert, who's been on these and other Vermont airwaves for many years. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You certainly landed in the frying pan at this time in history.
Well, yeah, it feels a little bit like out of the frying pan and into the fire as I'm coming from the ACLU of Arizona. But I'm returning home in a sense. I am from New England. I grew up in Massachusetts, and I went to school in Vermont at Middlebury College. I have family in Vermont. So my family and I are returning to New England, which is great. And as I say, I'm coming after about 5 years as a staff attorney at the ACLU of Arizona in Tucson, where we had no shortage of immigrant rights issues to address. So, yeah, as I say, it feels a little bit like out of the frying pan and fire coming here a few months before the new administration, which has gotten off to quite a start in terms of attacking basic civil liberties and civil rights. I think my experience in Arizona may end up being a bit of a foreshadowing of what lies ahead.
So tell us a little bit about, I mean, obviously now issues around the border, the wall that President Trump has promised allegedly to be paid for by Mexico, despite Mexico saying no way and in various colorful versions of saying that. So you lived on the border. Tell us a little bit about what civil liberties on the border was like, what some of the big issues you were dealing with while in Arizona.
Well, sure. So I was sent to Tucson by the ACLU of Arizona to open our first regional office in Tucson to focus on the border and specifically, primarily on border patrol abuse. There is a lot of that in southern Arizona and across the southwest border. Border patrol, which is part of Customs and Border Protection, is increasingly recognized as one of the most lawless and notoriously abusive federal law enforcement agencies in the country. And of course, one of the executive orders is proposing to expand the Border Patrol further by an additional 5,000 agents. It had already doubled in size twice over the past two decades to 21,000 agents, which was a big part of the culture of abuse and impunity, the fact that the agency had grown too quickly for it to be able to keep track of or control these agents. So that looks like that problem is only going to get worse. One thing people from the border region will tell you correctly is that border cities like Tucson, like El Paso, like San Diego are some of the safest in the country. So this massive buildup, this massive militarization in these relatively safe and secure communities where net migration is actually down, though border crossing deaths continue to go up. To pile on to that additional border militarization when we've already seen so many problems with it is wrongheaded and unfortunately of a piece with many many of the other executive orders that were just issued.
So the ACLU nationally has released a 7-point plan of action to take on the Trump administration. Tell us a little bit about what's in that plan.
Well, so the ACLU has been preparing since the election for the incoming administration. And yes, part of that preparation is this 7-point plan. One piece of that plan, the first piece, is focused on holding this administration accountable, making it more transparent. And one of the ways that we do that with all administrations and many levels of government is through Freedom of Information Act requests. So the ACLU has already initiated a Freedom of Information Act request to get at information concerning potential conflicts of interest within the administration. There's been a lot, obviously, written and said about potential or apparent conflicts of interest, and so we are going to be using the Freedom of Information Act to get as much of that information as we can. So transparency and accountability is sort of the first step, and as I say, something that we started before the administration even came into office. Another plank is obviously immigrant rights, and we are already hard at work on that. You mentioned the litigation that immediately followed the executive order on Friday. Multiple lawsuits were filed on Saturday by the ACLU and other partner organizations. There have since been additional lawsuits this week, including an increasing number from now state officials and cities who are saying they're going to sue to block Trump's Muslim ban. So immigrant rights, protecting immigrant communities will be a core piece of the work. Protecting reproductive rights, we're expecting continued assault on Planned Parenthood and on women's access to reproductive health care. LGBT equality, core First Amendment rights. We've seen a lot of rhetoric targeting journalists, targeting protesters, whistleblowers. We are going to be working to ensure that the First Amendment continues to protect all of those people. And so we have a battle plan laid out, and unfortunately, the administration is not wasting any time, and we are. Heard it work already, but there's obviously a lot still to come.
Talk a little bit about where you see Vermont being most vulnerable to, or where you anticipate that the ACLU of Vermont is going to have to intervene. What are your priorities here?
Well, certainly, on immigrant rights, we are working with state and local officials to explore all of the ways that the state and its cities and towns can push back against the just blatantly anti-immigrant measures that the Trump administration has already announced. One thing is the issue of so-called sanctuary cities. And it should be said, there is no set definition of a sanctuary city. So to the extent Trump is saying he's going to crack down or withhold funding from sanctuary cities, it's far from clear what that even means. Generally, a sanctuary city is a term used to describe any number of policies designed to limit local law enforcement entanglement in immigration and deportation, to build trust in the community and safety in the community. And there's absolutely nothing improper about those kinds of policies. So there would be no legal basis for the Trump administration to pursue action against states, towns, and cities that enact policies like that. And so we're going to be working with the state, with state officials to, as I say, to explore the policy options. And the good news, other than the fact that the law is on our side, is that Vermont already has a fair and impartial policing policy on the books. State law enforcement have been directed to implement a version of the model fair and impartial policing policy that was developed by a working group. And those that have not adopted their own policy have essentially accepted the model policy by default. We would like to see all state agencies, not just law enforcement, but cities, towns, and really the state itself, to adopt the fair and impartial policing policy and we're going to be working to try and make that happen. And otherwise, we're going to be doing everything we can to support the immigrant community here in Vermont. We still don't know. Other than these vague and poorly worded and legally dubious executive orders, we don't know what the government is actually going to do with regards to some of those orders. But we have to be ready to stand by the immigrant community here in Vermont with Migrant Justice and other grassroots organizations, and we stand ready to do that.
We're talking today on the Vermont Conversation with James Lyle. He's the executive director of the Vermont ACLU. If you want to join the conversation, you can call 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Last year, the Vermont ACLU chapter was very involved in winning passage of a new privacy bill. Explain what that was about. What was accomplished there?
Sure. So I wasn't here, so I'm going to do my best to to relay my knowledge and what I've learned so far on the job. There was a really important bill that passed last session that the ACLU was very much involved in that limited, it basically addressed a number of forms of surveillance resulting from new and emerging technologies. I mean, we've seen this not just in Vermont but around the country. The government, as technology develops and advances, the government has new tools with which to monitor the citizenry. And so this bill took aim at a number of these technologies, including drones, including license plate readers, including stingrays, which are now banned in Vermont. These are all technologies that law enforcement use to track the movement and location of individuals. Essentially, the bill put a warrant requirement in place so that law enforcement, in order to make use of a drone to access information collected with a license plate reader or other technology, now at least has to obtain a warrant, which is, that's the standard limit on law enforcement's search powers, from a pre-technology age or a pre-digital age. In a number of ways, we are scrambling to essentially catch up with technology as these new technologies evolve. So too has to the constitutional protections that apply.
So, speaking of new technology, something that many folks are coming into contact with much more regularly are drones. Local neighbors can have drones with cameras attached to them. What are the rules in Vermont surrounding the use of drones, and what rights do people have if their neighbor decides to, routinely fly drones around their house?
Well, so it's a good question, and it's one that I myself need to dig into a little bit more. Our focus is primarily on the government's use of drones. And as I say, the bill last session was designed to require law enforcement to get a warrant to be able to use drones for law enforcement purposes. And as far as the pesky neighbor who keeps buzzing your house with a drone, there may be existing nuisance ordinances or other ways to get at that. But it's not to downplay that as an issue, but I think we are primarily concerned with the government's use of drones and other related technologies, and that they not be improperly used or overused to monitor the population.
So of the many things we're hearing about that may result in an encroachment on rights, be it reproductive rights, LGBT rights, immigrant rights, privacy, that are all now in play with President Trump at the helm, what's the one that worries you most for Vermont?
Well, it's hard to pick just one. Right now, the Muslim ban and the immigration orders are front and center, and that is a huge concern. I mean, really, make no mistake, this is a fundamental attack on a core principle of our democracy, the idea that you cannot favor one religion over another. I think the courts so far have indicated, that there were multiple lawsuits filed, as I said, right away, and more than one federal court judge found it very likely that the plaintiffs in those cases would succeed in striking down portions of those orders as unconstitutional. It's encouraging. But if the administration is going to be undertaking something that extreme, essentially in the first week or two of the administration, that just, as I say, goes to the core of who we are as a people, to attack that principle right out of the gate, you have to think that we're in for a really bumpy ride, to say the least, not just on immigrant rights, but potentially on many of the other areas that you just highlighted. And that's why it's so critical that people stand up, stay engaged, and start to fight back. We really have to take action, not just in the courts, although the ACLU and others will certainly be fighting in the courts as hard as we can. But public officials who are from across the political spectrum are speaking out and looking to take action. At the same time those lawsuits were filed, there was a spontaneous outpouring of protesters in the airports and in city centers around the country. That needs to continue. And people need to engage in the political system at every level, whether it's local school board, whether it's openings come up at city council, at the local level, in state government, staying engaged with your elected representatives at all levels, including at the federal level, looking ahead to 2018 and finding the locus, the closest swing district. There's just a whole lot that we can do and that we need to do if we're going to preserve some of these fundamental civil liberties and constitutional rights that many of us take for granted. They are under assault, and they're going to be under assault under this administration. And so it's encouraging to see people are not sitting back and waiting for it to get worse, but that we need to keep the pressure on, and we need to continue.
What does or can Vermont political leaders do, and what are they doing at the moment?
So as I said, it's really encouraging to see public officials speaking out. I think in the last week we've heard from the Vermont congressional delegation, Governor Scott, the Vermont Mayor's Coalition. They all spoke out to condemn this Muslim ban. Attorney General Donovan is convening a task force to look at what the state can do to support local immigrant communities, what cities and towns can do. The ACLU is going to be participating in that task force. Governor Scott expressed a similar interest and pledged that Vermont would not be joining any 287G agreements. These are the agreements whereby local cops are essentially deputized as immigration agents. It just has just a devastating impact on the relationship with local communities, on community trust, and therefore on community safety for everyone. It's also a recipe for constitutional rights violations, and we've litigated, the ACLU has litigated a growing number of cases involving local police overstepping the bounds of their authority, wading into immigration, which is a federal matter. It makes good policy sense for local officials to stay away from immigration as it is. They certainly have that right. The Trump administration cannot force them to do otherwise. So, it's encouraging that local officials have recognized that they do have a major role to play, and they seem very eager to play that role to defend our communities against what appear to be some unconstitutional encroachment by this administration. It's very encouraging. We still have a long way to go to figure out what shape some of these policies are going to take, but the interest is there, and I think we're going to see a strong response from Vermont, which is needed.
As we mentioned earlier, your previous posting for the ACLU was in Arizona, a place that has been famous for some high-profile entanglements with civil rights with some of figures such as Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who was routinely using his sheriff's deputies to stop and demand papers from particularly people who he thought were Latino or Hispanic, and state laws that were, routinely getting challenged in court. What lessons do you take from Arizona now that you're here in Vermont about what do you need to do to be effective?
Well, I mean, one of the lessons, one of the primary lessons I think I just referenced is that local police have no business, local officials have no business entangling themselves in immigration. For immigration law is complicated. It is not for local police to try and figure out how to do it. When they do that, they invariably overstep their authority, open themselves and their cities up to liability, and violate people's rights. And I think a growing number of law enforcement experts, senior law enforcement officials, recognize how destructive that relationship between local police and immigration officials can be and has been. Of course, Sheriff Arpaio perfected that arrangement. He essentially deputized his sheriff's deputies to act as if they were ICE officials. And after 8 years of litigation, the ACLU shut down the systemic racial profiling by Maricopa County Sheriff's Department. Sheriff Arpaio was subsequently held in contempt of court, and at long last, the voters of Maricopa County voted him out. I guess one of the lessons there, other than local police should not be in the immigration business, is that through litigation, through community organizing, there was a huge grassroots movement to defeat Sheriff Arpaio and his anti-immigrant agenda, and it took time. It took a long time, and it was a protracted battle in the courts and in the streets of Maricopa County. But he's now gone. Unfortunately, it now appears that the Trump administration wants to model that kind of policing for the rest of the country. I think those lessons are going to apply. The other is, as I was saying at the beginning, the board, I was in Tucson, which is about 60 miles north of the border. That falls within CBP's, 100-mile zone of authority. And Vermont, of course, is within the same zone. And so, the Border Patrol and Customs and Border Protection use that authority to conduct interior enforcement activities, sometimes far from the border, sometimes having very little to do with actual border enforcement, often going on fishing expeditions for all manner of wrongdoing with massive rights violations. We filed Freedom of Information Act requests that uncovered extensive abuses that were never properly investigated, agents who were never disciplined. That kind of thing is widespread in the Southwest border region, in Tucson sector in particular. It's a mistake to think that Vermont can't experience those kinds of problems. Certainly, it's a different border, but CBP and Border Patrol are patrolling the northern border. That border has already become more militarized. In some ways, resembles places like Nogales, Arizona, 30 years ago, when a border wall was just starting to go in, and a town that had traditionally been united across an international boundary was increasingly divided by it. And you're starting to see that more and more on Vermont's northern border.
Okay.
That's something we really have to look out for.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. James Lyle, Executive Director of the Vermont ACLU, thanks so much for joining us in the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it.
And that does it for this week's show. You can hear this and all shows at VermontConversation.com and on our new podcast if you go to the iTunes store. I'm David Goodman. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday at 1 with another Vermont Conversation.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility has presented the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. The special feature from VBSR is underwritten in part by Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development. The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. By CW Print and Design, formerly Copy World, your local digital print shop, offering quick design and printing services for projects of all sizes. By Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, and Ski Erg. Proud to support nonprofit groups such as Local Motion, Vermont's statewide nonprofit advocate for walkable and bikeable communities. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy transformation while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine, as well as over 750 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org.